You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. It might be that we just hear more about them lately, but head injuries from sports activities seem to be on our radar screen more. From high school players suffering from concussions to those in the pros suffering lifelong brain damage. New research says that the damage caused by repeated concussions can eat away at the brain. But how can you tell when a brain has had enough? A group of researchers at Boston University started a brain bank. They're studying brains donated by former football players to figure out how to help people protect themselves. Our guests are Robert Stern, Associate Professor of Neurology and Co-Director of the Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy at Boston University School of Medicine. He's also Co-Director of BU's Alzheimer's Disease Clinic and Research Program. Thanks for being with us today, Dr. Stern.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Anne McKee is Director of Neuropathology at the New England Virginia Medical Center. She's also an Associate Professor of Neurology and Pathology and Director of the Neuropathology Corps, also at the Alzheimer's Disease Center. Thanks for being with us today, Dr. McKee.
Thanks for being here. I mean, thank you for having me. I should just say that I'm at the VA Medical Center.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Forget what I said. Well, you're at the VA Medical Center.
Right.
Dr. Stern, what is this disease called? Is it something new?
Well, it used to be referred to as dementia pugilistica or punch drunk syndrome. So it's actually nothing new. It's been around, described since 1928 in boxers. And so it had been thought of as being a relatively common thing in boxers for the last 80-plus years, but it's only in the last decade or two that the term chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, has been used to describe this same disease. And what it is, it's a progressive neurodegenerative disease that's similar to Alzheimer's disease, but it's not at all the same as Alzheimer's. It's a unique disorder.
This is not something Muhammad Ali has.
Well, it could be. It definitely could be, because one of the things that is part of the disease in some people is movement problems and Parkinsonian features, as well as early memory and cognitive difficulties, depression, impulse control problems, and behavior change.
Mm-hmm. But you said we've been calling it being punch drunk for years, and now we have a real name that you've put to it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And Anne McKee, what do the changes look like in the brain?
Well, what you see in the brain is this tremendous deposition of a protein called tau, T-A-U, and the tau actually accumulates inside the nerve cell, and it slowly builds up and stops the nerve cell from functioning properly. It interrupts its normal connections with other nerve cells, and eventually the nerve cell dies. It's similar in some ways to Alzheimer's disease, but it's definitely not Alzheimer's disease. It clinically sometimes looks like Alzheimer's disease, but pathologically it's a unique disorder that we've only seen in individuals that have repetitive head trauma.
Mm-hmm. Do we know, Dr. Stern, how to recognize this in athletes?
Well, I wish I could tell you that we could recognize it in someone while they're alive and to be definitive about it, but we don't yet. We're really in the infant stages of understanding the disease. We do know that there is that triad of early symptoms of memory problems, depression, and impulse control difficulties in someone who does have a history of repetitive head trauma, and these problems start years or decades after the person stopped playing their contact sport. So it's not something that is just a cumulative effect of a bunch of head trauma. It is this disease that gets put in place, a cascade of events in the brain that gets started while someone is hurting their head in sports, for example, and then it continues to develop the degenerative problems that Dr. McKee was referring to.
I see. That's why you say you think Ali might be subject to this, because it did happen years later.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. Now, Dr. Stern, you're collecting brains. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, the brains are actually being collected in Dr. McKee's brain bank at the Bedford VA Medical Center. And we as a team in our Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy are looking at this disease from all different perspectives, from looking at the brain tissue at the brain bank to following a large group of athletes through the course of their life and seeing what their symptoms are like, what the course of the clinical presentation is, and then all of these athletes will be donating their brains and spinal cord tissue after they pass away.
And Dr. McKee, how do you get them to do this, to donate those brains?
Well, it's been, what we do is we call up as soon as we hear in the news that a prominent athlete has died. I mean, we basically, we ask for the brain of every athlete that we know of that's died, and we look on the web and follow the news stories, and if we see an athlete that died, we try to contact the family and ask them if they'd be willing to participate in this study. Because it's often a cold call, it's a, they don't know us, we don't know them, it's been very helpful for all the publicity that we've been getting in the media, and especially the support of some active players, like the three Pro Bowl players that recently donated their brain, or signed up to donate their brain when they die. Getting participants like that makes it more likely that when we call these individuals, the families of these individuals after they die, that they will consider donating their brain.
And anybody we would know so far?
They've all been prominent players. Not all of them played in this decade, though. So in the 60s, there was Walter Hilgenberg, Louis Kriechmer. They were all quite famous athletes in their day.
Uh-huh. Kriechmer was a Hall of Famer. And then, unfortunately, we've had some younger players who were prominent themselves. John Grimsley died at age 45. Just 2 years ago. Tom McHale was a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He died also at age 45. So we have these people who have been pretty prominent athletes, several of whom passed away early in their life from very tragic circumstances.
Is it, and Robert, is it just athletes then? Or are
no,
there other people?
No, not, absolutely not. It's anybody who suffers repetitive head trauma, and in the literature you'll see that there have been epileptics. There have been assault victims. There have been victims of domestic abuse. We're concerned that what we're seeing in the athletes may be much more generalizable to the greater population, especially individuals like our military veterans and our soldiers who suffer repetitive head injury.
How about all these, professional wrestlers we see on TV?
Well, in fact, the person who really got this effort started is a gentleman by the name of Chris Nowinski, who's one of our co-directors of our center. Chris started the Sports Legacy Institute. He was a Harvard football player who went on to be a professional wrestler in the WWE, and unfortunately, a culmination of concussions he had while playing football at Harvard, and then also while being a wrestler, even though it looks fake, it's really major hits these wrestlers take, and he had to stop his athletics at that point because he was quite impaired due to the repetitive concussions. He then made it his real-life mission to try to let the world know how important sports-related head trauma is. But if you remember the case of Chris Benoit, he's the very famous World Wrestling Entertainment wrestler who tragically killed his wife and child and then killed himself. Initially, it was believed that it was steroids and steroid rage that caused him to act so completely out of character. And in fact, what happened was that when his brain was examined by the Sports Legacy Institute people, it turned out he had extensive evidence of CTE.
Wow.
It's likely that his behavior was caused by this degenerative brain disease.
What do we tell to parents whose kids are playing football and getting hit on the head?
That's a great question. I wish we could tell them for sure it's safe to play in all circumstances or here's the specific things you have to be careful of. We don't know for sure, but we have to let people know, parents know, coaches, the players themselves. We have to let them know that the brain is a very delicate part of our body and that every time someone gets dinged or they see stars or they have their, quote, their bell rung, those are concussions. And even the times when someone doesn't have a specific clinical symptom, like the concussion, they may be hurting their brain inside that hard skull anyways.
Would they be doing that in soccer, a header, hitting the ball with your head?
Well, we don't know for sure yet. It used to be when soccer started, it was a much harder leather ball, and that was probably doing a lot of damage. But yes, it is very possible that heading might be doing some kind of subconcussive blow to the brain, but we don't know for sure.
But your message is be aware. Don't just send your kid out after some sort of head banging going on in football.
Be very aware. Make sure the kid does not return to play if they've hurt their head in any case, and seek medical attention, and take a very careful stepwise return, not just to the playing of the sport, but also to even, you know, text messaging and doing things intellectually that can be harmful to their brains while they're still recovering from the concussion.
And Dr. McKee, if you have athletes who want to participate in donations, how should they reach you?
Well, they can look on the website, either the Boston University Alzheimer's Disease Center, and look for the Center for the Study of Traumatic Disease, or you can look on the Sports Legacy Institute website. Both areas will have individuals to contact, and we'd be extremely interested in any participants out there.
How extensive is your collection at this point?
Well, right now we've had over 20 athletes donate their brain. We've had we've examined the brains of 7 football players. And as we get more attention to this problem, we seem to be becoming, you know, we have a faster and faster rate of collecting brains.
Now, those are the brains that of players who have passed away that we actually have their brain tissue. Right now we have approximately 200 athletes, both professional and college, retired or active, who have agreed to participate in our longitudinal research study, and after they pass away, they'll be donating their brains. Mm. And right now what they're doing is participating in an annual telephone examination of what their symptoms are, along with what their past medical and concussion history is.
All right, so you're getting cooperation, I guess, from both the NFL and the NCAA and people like that.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say we're getting cooperation from the leagues. We're getting tremendous cooperation from the athletes. There have been some really fabulous athletes all around the country who have said, you know, enough is enough. We need to take this thing seriously, and anything I can do to help the researchers figure out what this disease is all about, I'll be glad to help.
Well, thank you both for taking time to be with us and talking about this. We'll get a little bit more publicity about this after this program is over, I can assure you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Robert Stone and Dr. Ann McKee talking about this new kind of illness for the brains.